tells you a lot about grit in number one, because the main character, she is determined to succeed.
Oh,
And
yeah.
she also loves movies. And this really inspires her to and incorporates what she's learned from movies into her everyday life.
That's
And
right.
I find now that I tend to also there's some things that I've learned from movies as well that I use in my life.
Welcome to My Movie Story. I'm your host, Brian McAleer. This is the podcast where we dive into the movies that have shaped us. Each episode, we sit down with a special guest to discuss their all-time favorite film, the movie that changed their life, and the one film they think everyone needs to see. Get ready as we journey through the cinematic worlds that make us who we are. This is My Movie Story. Julie is a highly sought-after TEDx speaker, business coach, and award-winning author dedicated to empowering entrepreneurs and leaders to build and grow successful businesses. With a passion for helping women establish and expand their brands, Julie has become a trusted advisor for many women. As a dynamic speaker, Julie has captivated audiences with her insightful talks and has been featured on prominent media outlets such as ABC, NBC, and Fox. She also hosts her own radio show, Confident You. Now, here's our episode with Julie. Well, hi, Julie. Welcome to My Movie Story. How are you going today?
I am doing great. Thank you so much for having me. I am thrilled to be here. I've been looking forward to our time together, Brian.
Thank you. Oh, I appreciate you saying that. And so have I, actually. We first connected a few weeks ago and had a few conversations back and forth about your films. And I know it was a very careful choice and you really sort of thought about it and the three great films. So before we jump into your films, Julie, tell us a little bit more about yourself. You know, what do you do? And what's going on for you right now?
Yeah, thank you again. I am a business and life strategist. I work with entrepreneurs mainly and also work with companies. I come into companies and I do trainings on several different topics. But when I'm working with entrepreneurs, I help them build a business with consistent income. This is one of the major faults that entrepreneurs have, that they ride that roller coaster ride and they cannot create consistent income. So I come in with my business experience and I help them really be able to create the habits, the infrastructure, and the strategy that helps them be able to service people and have the time freedom and income freedom that they desire from being an entrepreneur.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And yeah,
Yeah, I
good
live in
to
Connecticut as well. I moved here from New York City. Although I've been here 12 years, I still have a hard time saying I'm from Connecticut. I enjoy it. I enjoy New England. It's beautiful. My husband is from here. But again, it's New York is basically where I feel more at home.
Right, yeah, absolutely, because I guess it's wherever you were, your
Yeah.
upbringing took you and all of that. So yeah, 100%. And so it's great to have you on here, and really cool to hear
Thank
about
you.
your business and how you help people. And definitely my ears pricked up a couple of times there, because I do a bit of coaching as well, and I'm like, oh, okay, great. Well, maybe I'll have a separate podcast with you about that at some point.
Yeah, we should talk about it. I love
Fantastic. yeah
talking everything strategy, and
yeah
especially this time of year, people are
mm.
starting to wrap up the year, plan for a new one. And that's a lot of what I help entrepreneurs do is create that right strategy.
Absolutely, yeah, and just to know that things are operating and taken care of, because yeah, you want to get into that field of work to have more time, not be working longer
Yeah.
and not see any change in lifestyle or pay. It's about the
Yeah.
freedom. And yeah, and it's a lot of responsibility, but knowing that there's a great coach out there like you who can help people with it, that's
Thanks.
awesome. So
You're so
fantastic.
sweet. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. But yeah, to get the time off. This is why you chose to be an entrepreneur. Don't work the 24/7. Select the times. I don't work Friday afternoons. I'm moving in the new year. I'm working toward not working Fridays at all because again, I created that intentionality and have a very specific plan that I follow in the business. And that's what I teach other entrepreneurs to do.
Yeah, no, it's great. I think some version of a plan for life, I think, is really great. And that's definitely something
Yeah.
I'm looking at this year, is, trying to master plan my life a bit more. And have, when you've got all these ideas and it's like, you don't want to be like, oh, I wish I'd
Yes.
done that. I wish I'd done this. You want to give everything a chance to breathe and have a go. And if it doesn't work out, that's all right. At least you gave it a shot. And
Yeah, absolutely.
yeah, so really cool.
Absolutely.
Awesome. We've got some movies to talk about now, and the first one we're going to dive right into this because I know you're raring to go is your all-time favorite film. And I say this in every episode, but I get to discover all these new films that I otherwise would never know about or might not be on my radar to go and watch because I have a very long list of films. So I didn't even know this movie existed. You know, I guess I was a little kid in the early 90s when it came out. But we've had a few films that address this topic and this era. So I'm going to let you tell our viewers and listeners, what is this movie? What's it all about? And why is it your all-time favorite?
Well, this movie, again, you are not the only one who has not heard of this movie.
Good.
I happen to know it because I read the book. And I have to tell you that I'm going to do it a disservice not knowing the author of the book. It will come back to me probably when I'm thinking about it later, but Shining Through is the movie that is my all-time favorite.
I'll meet you in 2 weeks.
Eyes down, say nothing. I'm trying not to look like a spy.
What happened to the replacement?
The replacement is lost in Berlin.
Get her the hell out of there.
Go away, or you'll kill us all.
Michael Douglas, Melanie Griffith.
I want you on that train.
I can't come out now.
Shining Through.
It has everything. It's romantic, but it also has a little bit of suspense and a little bit of action and intrigue. The movie itself has a very, it's set in the 1940s during World War II. Mm-hmm. And the main character is played by Melanie Griffith. So you either love her or don't like her. But I happen to think she was a really good cast for the show because she reminds me of that 1940s blonde bombshell kind of person.
She had the look, and, didn't she? Yeah,
she has that look, and she wears that red lipstick. The show also, the movie reminds me a lot of the other movies that my dad would watch, and I was very close with my dad. So although it's not now it is, I guess, an old movie. But when I watched it, I kind of felt like I was watching an old movie too. Because the way that the movie is set up, it tells you a lot about grit in number one, because the main character, she is determined to succeed.
Oh, yeah.
And she also loves movies. Mm. And this really inspires her to... and incorporates what she's learned from movies into her everyday life. And I find now that I tend to also, there's some things that I've learned from movies as well that I use in my life. And funny enough, we talked about it with my husband earlier today.
Yep.
We were talking about the movie Working Girl that also has Melanie Griffith. And I was telling him, I said, you know, well, you have to kind of make the connection of the dots of like, if this is related to that. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, that's how I kind of figure out strategy sometimes in business, because kind of like what the Melanie Griffith character does in Shine and Working Girl.
Yep.
And he's like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah. And that's the same thing that the character in Shining Through does, that
for
she uses what she's learned in these spy movies or movies in her era to kind of look at life from a different lens.
And absolutely.
I love that. Yeah.
And she, you know, the what she stood for as a person, as a woman at that time, you know, the world was at war, and women typically didn't hold positions of power or influence. And, you know, I guess working in the wartime, you know, there were a lot of women employed in that. If they weren't working as nurses, they were working in clerical roles. So lots of like typing, that sort of thing. So I guess she sort of stood out from the crowd, and the men, and the main man played by Michael Douglas, who we'll talk about, was quite caught off guard. And then a relationship starts to develop there a little bit.
Right.
And then there's a few turning points. So can you comment a little bit on that relationship and the Michael Douglas character? Because it was an interesting casting, putting these two together. And you know, the time that it was, you know, it was around the Basic Instinct phase. So Michael Douglas was like, you know, he was everywhere. And you know, if his film didn't have like a love scene in it, you know, it would be voiding his contract probably. But
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about that subplot.
So, you know, it's funny, Michael Douglas for me is one of these guys that he seems very rugged. And yes, he had done a lot of those movies in the 80s and 90s where he played the leading character. I loved that he, again, played a very opinionated, very strong character, but I loved more that her character stood up to him, was very outspoken, never, and again, a woman in there in that era was not necessarily that outspoken. So, and he learned to, he didn't love it that she was outspoken, and because he was always being in charge, and he loved that being in charge character.
Yeah, he
But
did.
again, he learned to accommodate and accept and kind of go along with her ideas and go along with her character and accept that.
Yeah, once he saw the value that she could bring to the operation, that she was smart, very observant, you know, she spoke German fluently. So at first there was a little bit of speculation. There's like, oh, is she the spy? Is he the
Is
spy?
she the spy, right?
You know,
Absolutely.
who's who here in this situation? Yeah. And then just as they're kind of getting together, Pearl Harbor happens. Yeah. So
Correct.
we won't spoil the film for anyone who hasn't seen it, because obviously how it all finishes and everything is really interesting. But then Pearl Harbor happens, and then they kind of get separated, don't they? Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, again, the story, the film itself, another thing that I really love is that there is a lot of historical aspects to the film, right? So if you like history, if you're the kind of person who likes that aspect, you're going to enjoy the film. It's not just the storyline, but it's really how they weave what is really happening. And the other part we didn't really talk about is that at the beginning of the movie, the character that Melanie Griffith plays is actually being filmed for a documentary. And she
Yes.
begins playing herself as an older woman recounting the story. So I love that aspect too, because it's I think that there's such value in the stories that we share. I don't know if you're familiar with the term the silent generation, but anybody from the 1940s and 50s, they're coined the silent generation because it's this generation that encounter war, world war, and yet they kind of went about their business, right? After the war was over and
That's
started
right.
to work. And it's so important that we create the opportunity to share the stories, to share the trauma and drama that was going on in that time. And I feel
Absolutely.
that especially now this movie is timely. We
Yes,
can't
very.
forget that, you know, there's some atrocities that happen in the world. And how it's not just the headlines, which in the movie, there's a lot of headlines of what is happening in the world, but it really deep dives into the interpersonal relationships and the people, the humans, the relationships that are touched by the headlines.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point that you make there. And obviously, you know, the peak of World War II was almost 90 years ago, which is hard to believe. And
I know, it's hard to believe.
very few people who were a part of that and directly involved in that. There's not many left today. My wife is quite fortunate because her grandfather, who has just turned 99 years old,
Oh, God bless them.
served in World War II, and
Wow.
he still remembers things in very vivid detail. And sitting down and hearing him talk is fascinating, because it's like, you know, the world has changed so much in that time, and he's seen so much and lived through all of that. But now, like you said, we're seeing some parallels to what's going on in the world today. So unfortunately, you know, history does repeat itself a bit, but really important, I think, to listen to the stories of those people who lived through that, so we can learn from them, and think about, well, if this was to happen again, how might we deal with it as well? I don't think people think about that too much.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the other part that I really love about this movie is the main character, Lena, the Melanie Griffith character, she goes and finds herself in the other side of the world, right? Where her life could be in danger. Yet every turn that there is a challenge, that something kind of comes up in the way of her completing her mission or going through what she's supposed to be going through. Every time she has a challenge, rather than just giving up, she's very tenacious. And I think that that's something that all of us need to really apply to life, right? Of course, I come with a lens of a coach that it's not like, oh, I can't do that, but really asking the question, well, how can I? And you see that throughout.
Yes.
And even in the times in which she is disappointed, she is hurt by everything that happens in the movie, she still pushes through and she keeps her sights on what the end result is and where she wants to go and what she wants to accomplish. Yeah. And I think that's a great lesson for life. Like,
absolutely,
things are going to happen. People are going to disappoint you. The unexpected will come. But if you keep focusing on what your mission is in life and what you're working towards, you will keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. Really well put. Yeah. And she's a very strong character and very resilient, very resourceful. I guess you had to be in those times to survive, you know, and she's in really difficult circumstances where her, her purpose and her cover could be blown at any minute. So it's a very, you know, precarious sort of situation. And do you remember how you first saw the film? Like when it came into
I went to the movie theater. I remember very vividly.
Yep.
At the time I was living in Miami and I had two jobs. I was a teacher by day, but because most teachers don't make a lot of money, at night I was also working as in a retail store. And I remember, number one, I first bought the book at the bookstore in the mall.
Wow.
And throughout my, you know, every time I would go to dinner, I would read. So I was really excited the movie was coming out. And I went after work. It was super late, but I went after work to see the movie and I had some friends meet me. So I do remember that very vividly. And I also remember there is a scene in the movie in which Melanie Griffith's character goes to, I believe, I don't know if it was the opera or a ballet, and she's wearing a beautiful gown. And I'm thinking, oh, I would love a gown like that, and the design. And it's something that even now, like I think about, and that's really my favorite style of gown. I've gone to a couple black tie affairs and I'm always looking for something similar to that, even all these years later.
I wonder if maybe you just call up the film studio, see if the costume is hanging in somewhere.
I don't know. Yeah, right. I should. Know. I think that
you never know.
Never know. For
maybe
sure.
Maybe Melanie Griffith's got it in her wardrobe at home and as a memento. Yeah. And I was curious as I was watching it, I kind of had some different ideas on what the title of the film meant, because when you hear Shining Through, you don't think of a World War II spy movie. You know, it's an interesting title. Yeah. So what's your take on the title? What do you think it means?
I think that for me, the title is, here's someone who had everything working against her, right? Because at first, she's a woman. Number two, she's going into a male-dominated world. Number three, she's not as educated or educated at Vassar, right? Which is the college where most elite women were educated back then.
Yep.
She went to, I guess, Queens College or City College. And she had all these things that really could have kept her down, really could have, you know, diminished her, but yet she knew who she was. She knew what she stood for. And when it all came down to it, she's the person that shined through the difficulties, the hard times, the preconceived notions that other people can have of her as well.
Yeah.
Which I think it's important. She talks about how there's a line in the movie where I guess Michael Douglas says, are you always this outspoken? And she refers to how her dad was Jewish and her mom was Irish. Yep. And she alludes to the combination of how you know, she comes from very strong backgrounds that are very outspoken. And I think that that's the other piece that I really like about it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, she was definitely a one of a kind character. And yeah, it's an interesting, you know, take on what was going on in World War II, sort of some of those more like, I guess, hidden stories, that things are happening in the background that most people didn't associate with World War II. Like you think about the conflict and the soldiers storming the beach of Normandy and that sort of stuff. So it was interesting to see a different take on it. You know, obviously the Nazis are portrayed, and Liam Neeson is in the film as well. And I reckon that was kind of his audition piece for Schindler's List. Probably Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, I guess so.
Like, oh, there's my Oscar Schindler. Which
is right.
A couple of years later. And we've also featured Schindler's List on the podcast too, way back at the start. So
it's good to
add this film to that collection now. Yeah. Brilliant. And do you have a favorite scene or a favorite moment from the film?
I would have to say the end of the next end. And I don't want to give it away, but there is a scene that there a lot of action is happening. And I think that this goes back to the title, right? The Michael Douglas character just, he doesn't give up, right? And he keeps going in the middle of this action and he kind of saves the day, or so we think.
Yeah.
But as the character, the Melanie Griffith, is recounting for the documentary, she then talks about how she is at, yes, he might have like crossed the line for them and saved them from one circumstance, but she really came through and she's the one who shined through because she had what they needed to bring outside enemy lines. So,
that's right.
So I thought that's my favorite line when they talk about that.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. And then obviously she's sort of telling the story as an older lady. Mm-hmm. Throughout the film for that documentary. So she gets, I guess that's closure for her in a lot of ways, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it's great. I love that. You know, I have to tell you, when my husband and I started dating, and, you know, as a new relationship, you're kind of finding what you like about each other. And our first Christmas together, he got me a copy of Shining Through, because I had it on, of course, I'm going to date myself now. I had it on a VCR tape and I still have it. but of course I didn't have a VCR.
Right.
So when he had come over to my apartment, he's like, why do you hang on to this movie? I'm like, cause I love that movie.
Yep.
And for Christmas, he actually gave me the DVD.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
So that was it was a lovely gesture, and he's very thoughtful that way.
Fantastic.
So that's how I knew he was a keeper.
Oh, there you go. He knew what you liked, and he got it for you. So and when you mentioned this film to me, I thought, well, I haven't heard of that. I hope I can find it. Fortunately, it's currently, well, at the time of this recording, December 23, it's streaming on Disney Plus in Australia. So for Australian listeners, hopefully it's still on there. You can go and check.
I may have to go check that out in my Disney Plus here in the States.
It might be on there too, yeah. Awesome. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, good chat about Shining Through. Definitely a film some people might want to check out. So we might move on to your next film now, Julie, if that's okay. And this is the film that you attribute as being the one that was changing in some aspect, so changed your perspective, changed your viewpoint in some way. It's really quite broad, I guess, this category, because only you can really describe how it was a game changer for you. Let's hear all about this film. What could you tell us the title of the film and maybe a little bit about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So it is called The Family Stone.
Claire Danes, Diane Keaton, Rachel McAdams, Dermot Mulroney, Craig T. Nelson, Sarah Jessica Parker, and Luke Wilson. The Family Stone.
What's so great about you guys?
Nothing. It's just that we're all we've got.
And you! You're the worst!
I'm the worst!
Oh, boy.
And again, this could be one of these love it or hate it films, but one of the things that I love about the film, it has, again, big names. It has a fictional town in New England, which is where I live now. And Sarah Jessica Parker is one of the main characters, and she plays Meredith in the film.
Yep.
And she is engaged. She gets engaged to this nice young man, and they go to his family for Christmas. And I have been there. I have been the girlfriend that is coming to meet the family, and you're nervous, and you have a lot of different things going on in your brain. And ultimately, a lot of drama ensues, right? Because she doesn't really fit in, but there is a something going beneath the surface.
Yeah.
And again, I think that this is the one thing that changed my perspective a lot, that we in life tend to focus on ourselves, right? The Sarah Jessica Parker character is very self-absorbed. Like, do I fit in? And this family doesn't accept me. And look at everything that they're doing. Yet there was more going on beneath the surface.
Yep.
The mom had been diagnosed with cancer, and the sister was also the sister of the family. She was also going through her own stuff, and then the other siblings. So there's all these undercurrents. And I think that we forget, when we get into an uncomfortable situation, we tend to make it all about us.
Yeah.
And we think that this is happening to us, and we think that I don't fit in, or these people are being mean to me. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it really doesn't have to do or be about us.
No, you're right.
Everybody else is carrying their own stuff.
Exactly.
And this is one of the things that it really, you know, happens in everyday life. And as we're moving through the holidays, or whenever people are listening, I want you to think about when you get into these situations, right? That whether it's that difficult circumstance and you feel like you don't fit in, there might be other stuff, again, that is going on in the way that the family just kind of opens up and kind of puts their defenses down and says, hey, this is going on with me, or I'm dealing with the aggressive, you know, reoccurrence of a disease, and hey, I'm not happy with my family, or I feel like I want more, I want a relationship, but I'm not even sure how to connect. So all these things kind of play out.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's quite true to life, isn't it? It's not really cliched. It's not, you know, there's some familiarities to the plot, but then, like you said, each character is dealing with these things, and it's not always, it's not really obvious at the start, you know, it just sort of plays out over the course of the film. Yeah. And I just have to quickly share, like, when this film first came out, 2005, it was at the peak of Sex in the City. You know, at that time, I wasn't interested in that show. That was not my cup of tea. And I thought, oh, Sarah Jessica Parker movie. Okay, it's going to be like Sex in the City. Filed it away. I'm like, I'll probably never watch it. I know my wife has it on DVD downstairs. but, you know, now as a host of this podcast, it's not about what I think about the film. And I watched it, and it was not what I expected or assumed it was all the way back then. Mm-hmm. And I guess people at the time who were fans of Sex of the City and Sarah Jessica Parker were like, wow, she's really playing a different kind of character here. Because obviously in that TV show, she was really like a free spirit, said what, and did kind of what she want. Were you a Sex in the City fan? Did you sort of see it when it first came out?
Yes, of course. Yep. I lived in New York City. At the time, not only did I live in New York City, but I, you know, it's something that if you live in New York, you see stars walking around all the time. And for me, I lived in the Upper West Side, and also where one of the characters, Miranda, lived. So there was always filming. And although I loved the show, I hated it because it meant that parking was going to be unavailable on the street. And I had to like really drive far, put my car in the lot and pay a lot of money for parking because they were filming Sex in the City. So course, you hated to see the signs that, hey, in the next couple of days, we're going to be filming. Right. And it's like, oh, what a headache.
Life in New York,
I was a big fan.
There's always something.
Life in New York, absolutely. It was either Sex in the City or Law and Order. Those were the two things that you can count on being filmed in my neighborhood all the time. So,
interesting.
But, you know, it's a small price to pay for living in New York City.
Absolutely. I mean, it would be interesting. And, you know, I've been there a bunch of times myself. And my last trip there in 2010, I was there with my wife now, my girlfriend at the time. And a friend, and we were walking through Central Park, and there was signs up saying there is a movie being filmed. You may be filmed. Yeah. Please no flash photography, blah, blah, blah. So we sit down at the famous fountain. We're like, I wonder who we'll see.
Yeah.
And then we saw this man running backwards with the camera, and then a woman in black and this young guy running down the steps. And it was Lucy Liu.
Fun.
He was jogging with this young guy, and then they stopped. And then they walk up a pathway and they're having a conversation. So we were watching this scene be filmed. And then the film, I later found out, was this kind of Italian / American production called Someday This Pain Will Be Useful to You, which focuses on this young guy who's like trying to make sense of his life, and his parents hire a life coach who played by Lucy Liu.
Look at that.
Just found the film online. It was really hard to find, but I finally found it. And I have to admit, I skipped to the scene that we watched filmed, and I was like peering to see if we were there in the background on the fountain. But no, they didn't use that take. They must have done a bunch of takes. So we didn't make it into the movie. But we were there and we saw that being filmed that day. So that was pretty cool. Yeah.
That's very fun. Well, so I have to give myself a little bit of props too. I was a background actor in a movie, but I was not in New York City. I was here in Connecticut, believe it or not. I had to come to Connecticut to be a background actor in a movie. So
that was the movie. Fun. Can you tell us? Or are we sworn
I can tell you. It's called Last Stop Christmas. And if you're, I mean, most people in the States know the famous Hallmark Christmas movies. It's one of the Hallmark Christmas movies. Right. And very, very fun. The interesting part about that film is that Emma Thompson from the Back to the Future is in the movie. Yep. And so is I can't think of his name, the professor, the scientist guy. He's also in the movie.
Christopher Lloyd from Back to the Future.
Yeah, Christopher Lloyd. Right, thank you. My husband would be embarrassed that I don't remember his name. Yes. Yeah, so Christopher Lloyd was in the movie as well. Yep. And the premise of the movie is that this young woman lives in New York City and she's going home for the holidays. Or she's not going home for the holidays. She's a doctor and she's busy. But somehow she kind of goes back in time. So it's kind of like that premise of Back to the Future as well. Wow. And she goes back in time and kind of redoes the holidays and things play out different and how she, you know, there's maybe a different choice. So I'm and actually I got more screen time than I thought I would get. I was in a scene in the movie that they're in a big mansion for a Christmas party. Right. So it was very dressy. It was the middle of summer. So we had to be dressed in gowns, pretending we were in the middle of winter. but it was fun because I also, Erica Slesiak, which is play the matriarch of the movie. She was in my soap opera that I watched here in the States when I was growing up called One Life to Live. So of course, you know, there's all these other people who are definitely more well known. And yet I was very starstruck with Erica Slesiak. So I went up to her and I had seen her in New York multiple times walking around, but this is the closest. And I said, hey, I know that, you know, I've seen you in my neighborhood when I lived in New York, but I just, you know, want to thank you. You entertained me throughout my high school days. And it was great. When we were filming, we chatted a little bit. So when we were filming one of the scenes, she's like, hey, come stand over here. And she told me where to stand. So when they filmed and she's giving her line, I'm standing behind her. So that was kind of fun. So So I get to see myself every Christmas.
Yeah,
I get to see myself during Christmas movie time. That's and awesome. It's just like a quick 5 seconds. So
Well, I have a similar story I'll just share quickly that I was in an Australian film. And you see me in the background for about half a second. I might save the full story of that for another time. But yeah, it's cool. I actually went and saw it at the movies and saw myself on the big screen for like 2 seconds.
Love it.
Very end of the movie. I had to sit through the whole film to see it, but that was pretty cool. So coming back to Family Stone before we really interesting to hear that story. So I guess it's a Christmas film, but not necessarily a really holly jolly happy Christmas film. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on with this family. How was this film, I guess, what did it change for you? Like, how was it not what you expected, or, you know, how have you viewed things differently? Yeah.
You know, the one thing that it really changed for me, I think that from the outside, we look at everybody else's family as this idyllic family, but there's always something going on in the background that we really don't know about. And I think that for me, it reminded me that people may look like they have this charmed, beautiful life, right? From the outside, but in the inside, they're not immune to suffering. They're not immune to disease. They're not immune to having relationships that are trying. But ultimately, the other thing too, is that your family, at the end of the day, you can choose to be a part of the family. And like in the movie, the characters kind of make peace. And, you know, obviously time evolves and changes mm-hmm. and things happen, but they continue to make the commitment to be part of the family and to reconnect and to be there. And I think that that's a great lesson for all of us, no matter where we are. We live in a divisive world, right? Yeah. People tend to have difference of opinions. Yeah, family members fight or break up or whatnot. But ultimately, you know, you have to remember what connects you, what are the commonalities between people. And I think that that's one of the messages that I really love about Family Stone. And again, it's got some slapstick comedy, which I love to some extent, but it really does explore, you know, the triumphant of, it sounds so corny, but the triumphant of the human spirit. We can be hit with difficulty, tragedy, change in relationships, but ultimately we can make the choice to heal. We can make the choice to move forward no matter what happens. So I think that that's one of the lessons I love of that movie.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's true to life. And at the end of the day, your family are going to have your back, you know, despite your differences. And, you know, you can have a brother or a sister, they're your brother or sister, but you could be so different in your personality and your values and your identity. But at the end of the day, mm-hmm. you're family and you're there for each other. Even if when it's hard, even when it's awkward, even when it's stressful, you stick by each other. Because, when the chips are down, we go home and we go to those closest to us. And so you've got to work through the crap.
Yeah. And we have to get past that, right? Because the relationships won't ever be perfect. Never. And I think that I like that there's difficulty and there is a lot of animosity and yet people choose to get past that and people choose to come together and really remember what's more important at the end of the day. So I like that.
And is it a film you've watched several times? Is this one you've
absolutely
watched?
Yes, that's another one that I save for Christmas time. That I love movies during Christmas. I was telling you earlier, I don't watch a lot of television, but during Christmas time I make up for the whole year, I think. I love watching movies. I was actually my husband went to bed early last night and I wasn't quite ready to go. It was super early, and I sat and I turned on the little fireplace and had some tea, and I got to watch a couple movies.
Nice. Yeah. So, it's the time of year for that, isn't it? Yeah. That's like the rule in our house. Once December 1st comes, it's for our two daughters. They watch movies on a Friday, Saturday night, have some ice cream. It's Christmas movies. And then once it's maybe Boxing, we might let it stretch a couple of days after Christmas and then no more Christmas movies. We're pretty done by that point because they've watched all the Santa Clauses, Elf, Polar Express, Home Alone. They're watching all those kind of ones at the moment, which is fun. I really didn't know this was a Christmas film. I didn't know what to expect with this film because at the time it came out, I'll never watch that. But that was nearly 20 years ago. And, I'm a bit older and wiser now. and I'm glad you brought it to the podcast because it was I really enjoyed it. I got quite a lot out of it. You know,
it's a fun movie, and again, it has a lot of really big names: Sarah Jessica Parker, Luke Wilson. It has Rachel McAdams, and again, Diane really Keaton. Fun. Diane Keaton and Greg T. Nelson, is it?
Yeah, as the dad. Dermot Mulroney, who was on TV quite a lot. Some great Claire Danes as her sister.
That's right Claire, I forgot Claire Danes was there, you're right. Great cast. She was there too, so it really, really well done. And again, the intricacy of human relationships and people being human, I love that.
Very human, absolutely. And without giving it away, because we don't like to spoil movies on here, a bittersweet ending. You know, like some relationships are restored, new ones happen, you know, certain people aren't there the next time it comes around. But that's life, you know, that's life.
It's a season of life, right? People come into your life for a reason, a season or a lifetime. And I think that this is, you know, what happens in the movie, that there's people that come in for a period and others don't. And at the end of the day, again, you want to go ahead and focus on what's important. Mm. And, you know, there's another part of the movie that I really like as well, and is when the character Everett, his brother, is gay, and he and his partner want to adopt a child. So they express, you know, they are wanting to do that, and it again opens up a discussion. And I think that these are the kind of conversations that, rather than allowing them to be divisive within a family, having these type of conversations can help to create a dialogue and understanding amongst people, because sometimes we just think, I don't like that, or I don't want that, or not in my family, but we've never had a conversation of why, or tell me more about that. Mm. And why do you feel that way? And I think that the more that we create space for us to dialogue, the better we are, the better that we can understand each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, really, really well said. And it's not easy, but it's you know, it's necessary, because
going all
that time without things being said, then it gets really, really hard. And then you've got then you'll have real division in the family, and that's, nobody wants that at the end of the day.
Nobody wants that. Short. No.
Yeah, for
absolutely.
Sure.
So.
Alrighty.
So I love that for movie for that reason.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, cool. And we've got one more film to go, Julie. So this is the film that you think everyone needs to see. And again, a film I hadn't heard of or knew about. So thanks for introducing it to me. And I watched it and thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, found definitely some things in the film that I could relate to. So yeah, I'll let you tell us about this film. What's it called? And give us a quick little rundown of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So this film, definitely, yes, everybody has to watch it. And the reason is because there's a message behind it. The name of the movie is called The Way, and it is Martin Sheen plays the main character. And of course, a lot of people have not heard of this film.
Son was almost 40.
Yeah, but he'll always be your baby.
What was your son like?
Smart, confident, stubborn. Pissed me off a lot.
It was a lot like you.
Hey, that kid took my bag.
Hey! Hey! You can keep the pack! Just give me the box!
You don't choose a life, Dad. You live one.
His son, Emilio Estevez, actually directed the movie, and I believe maybe even wrote it. And he plays his son, Martin Sheen's character in the movie. And, you know, no spoiler alert, because this happens within the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Yep.
Martin Sheen plays a dentist, and he has a son who has chosen, after the death of the mom, to not continue with his PhD program. He wants to travel the world. And he says to the dad, I don't want to study sociology in a classroom. I want to be with people and kind of travel the world and learn about people by interacting with them. So he was about to embark on a pilgrimage in Spain called the Camino de Santiago. And as he started the pilgrimage, he dies in an accident at the beginning of the pilgrimage. And Martin Sheen gets the call, and then he goes to France, because the Camino de Santiago, the French route of the Camino de Santiago, begins in a town called Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port, which is in the Pyrenees Mountains. And people begin that hike there. And the point of the pilgrimage is that you are going to follow the steps that St. James, the apostle of Jesus, took to Spain to tell the world about Jesus and share the good news. So many people throughout centuries have done this pilgrimage and followed the steps of St. James. So a lot of people, many do it for religious reasons, and in the film, the character doesn't seem to necessarily have a religious reason for doing the pilgrimage. He was just interested in doing the walk, right?
Yeah.
But sadly, he died in the very beginning of his pilgrimage, which I have done the pilgrimage since because of the movie. And yeah. I will tell you, the French Pyrenees are no joke. And my friend Melissa, who I've traveled the world with, she is the person who told me about the film. And she says, you have to watch this movie and tell me what you think. And I watched the movie and I thought, we need to do this. And she's like, I know. So that was definitely an inspiration to go in this personal journey and personal pilgrimage to go and explore. And again, many people do the pilgrimage for many different reasons. And that's one of the things that the movie depicts. Yeah. It depicts how the Martin Sheen character, when he is faced with, he was estranged from his son. And then all of a sudden his son was chasing his dreams, but he died doing so, right?
Yeah.
And he decides that he is going to finish the pilgrimage on behalf of his son.
Yeah.
So everybody's like, you can't do this. You're too old. You haven't trained. Oh my gosh.
Yep.
But he is, you know, obsessed with him.
Yeah.
And he decides to start. And he didn't really know what he was getting into. But the fun part about the film is that he meets people along the way that are also, for their own personal reasons, doing the pilgrimage.
Real characters.
And And by the way, when you are doing the pilgrimage yourself, that's how it is. You meet people from different walks of life, and you create a very strong, interesting bond with them, because you are walking for 5, 6, 7, 8 hours maybe for the day, and you're just going along, and you end up talking to people and opening up, and you share your meals with them. And I love that about the movie, that it depicts the real life of a pilgrim while also exploring the grief that this father is going through. And exploring, because I'm sure there was a lot of, you know, regret from his character. That maybe, you know, and they do some flashbacks to conversations with him and his son. And he starts to see, like, wow, what did I do? I missed my time with my son. And you know, it's really interesting. And I love that movie for it. There's so many messages within.
For sure. Kind of going back to what you were saying about the family stone, like, you know, family is family, even if you disagree. And if things get left unsaid and you don't talk to each other, sometimes something will happen and it will force you to confront what it is that distanced you in the first place. So I think my impression was he did that walk to be like, okay, I need to honor my son's legacy, finish what he couldn't do. And a lot of walking is really put the past behind you, put feet on the ground, get in the present moment and walk into this new future. And you don't know what the future is going to bring. And he certainly didn't.
Yeah.
You know, and he had his guards up quite a bit when these started picking up these tagalongs, and they, you know, he found it quite challenging to be with them. And then eventually he lowered his guard, and he was a new man by the end of it. Yeah. And but you said you've done the walk yourself. So
yes,
I'm just curious, like in the film, obviously they have to reach certain points each day to sleep and eat and drink wine and that kind of thing. Is that quite
eat and drink wine?
Was it like you had to try and get to a certain each day?
So there's a couple of different things that happens in the walk, and I love this about the walk itself. So if depending on the type of person that you are, if you are a planner, yes, you will probably plan ahead. I want to start here, and There, most of the guidebooks tell you approximately if you want to make from Saint Jean Pied de Port and make it to Santiago de Compostela, which is where the big cathedral is and the pilgrimage ends. If you want to make it, it's anywhere between 35 to 40 days, depending on how fast you walk. So there is recommended itineraries. Now, my friend Melissa and I are not very good with recommended itineraries. We like to do our own thing. And then the other thing is we were going to, so the first walk is about 22 kilometers the first day, but you are in the Pyrenees Mountains. You're climbing up, you're climbing down. Now, there is an alternate route that you can you still climb the mountains, but you're kind of going around as well, and it's a little longer. And most people do it in 2 days rather than the one.
Right.
And that's what we decided to do. We decided to do that route, number one, because they warned us that the conditions were very windy, rainy, and there were some mudslides. And obviously, having watched the movie and knowing that that's where the character Emilio Estevez dies, we didn't want to do that. So we decided to take the longer way. and for the most part, and by the way, I did the first time I did the walk was 2016. So there was an app and some YouTube videos that kind of shared information. Now there is so much information about the walk. Most people, when I did the walk the first time, were carrying the guidebook, the original guidebook. And the thing that most pilgrims did is, as you carried the book, you would rip the pages of the stages that you did, so the book kept getting smaller and smaller, and you weren't carrying something as heavy. But yes, you can decide how long you want to walk most days. Most people, again, have the stages set if they want to follow, you know, the guidebook or the recommended distance, if they're trying, if they're on a schedule to finish at a certain amount of days. My friend Melissa and I are Camino Turtles, and we also knew we were doing the walk in stages. We weren't going to finish and do it for 35, 40 days all in one set. We were going to do it in multiple visits. Which you can do. A lot of people choose to do that. And one of the things that, you know, we picked up our little group, just like the Martin Sheen character does. The one thing that was interesting when I did the walk the first time is the night I left, I was leaving for Spain. My husband's nephew, who was about our age at the time, in his 40s, he had been in the hospital for a very long time, and he passed that night. And at first, I wasn't going to go because I wanted to be here for my husband and the family. And my husband's like, no, go. He would want you to go. So I was like Martin Sheen's character, you know, listening and just spending a little bit of the grief. Obviously, it wasn't my child, but it was tough to see someone so young, right, pass away. And like, he had his life in front of him. And it was very healing in some ways, because there were times in which we found people, like I said, throughout the road, and we would get to share a little bit, and you get to know people. We also had the luxury of saying, hey, there is a big festival in this town tomorrow, so maybe we'll just stay here, even though we could keep walking, and just enjoy the people and enjoy the event, and and really not be on an itinerary, which we all have this itinerary, this calendar, this go, and this is just a great opportunity to be on your own, which is a lot of what you see, that they follow a route, but basically they can decide, hey, I'm tired for the night, let's stay here, or I think we can keep going, let's do it. And it's a big parallel for life.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah. And the power of walking long distances, and, you know, a place that you might never go, or, like, you know, personally, in my downtime, like, all the main roads I drive down to get around town, occasionally I'll do the walk, and it might be like 8Ks, 9Ks. And even just after a 2-3 hour walk, which I can do fairly easily, my mind's much clearer. I kind of go on a walk with like a question or a problem, and I try and let the answer just reveal itself on the walk. So I can only imagine what doing that walk would do for your mind, your soul. Like, how are you? What was like your, can I ask, what was your reason for doing pilgrimage, and how you changed by
my, I think that's a great question. And a lot of people will ask you that. I had multiple reasons for doing the pilgrimage. Number one, it had been a couple years since my dad had passed, and my dad and I were very close. And one of the things that my dad said to me prior to him passing is, honey, you are so adventurous. You know, don't ever not go and do adventures. Keep doing that. You're so brave. You put yourself out there. And and I remember I was at a point in which I was not feeling brave. I was feeling stuck, and I was feeling like needed to shift. I needed to reconnect to myself and needed to kind of center myself. And I knew that I could have gone on a trip anywhere, right? But I decided that I also wanted to challenge myself physically.
Yep.
And I think that at times we get very complacent in life.
Yeah.
And I felt like I have an autoimmune, and definitely that was one of the things that was sort of impacting me at the time. And I was traveling a lot for work, and I thought, is this the path that I want to be in, or am I supposed to be here? So I figured going and just sort of recalibrating, like you said, walking is that thing where you really are in the present moment.
Oh yeah.
Right. You, and, you know, for someone like me, I'm a little clumsy. So I have to pay attention at times, especially if I'm on a trail, like where I'm walking. And that really is a way for me to connect to my thoughts, connect to where I am, and not worry about, you know, where I've been or where I'm going. I'm just really concerned with that present moment. I journaled a lot during that walk. And, you know, there's a lot of self-discovery. There's a lot of things that I came back with that I had some clarity on, as far as, you know, I knew that I loved my work, but I also knew that eventually I wanted to go out on my own. Which is what I'm doing now. And the idea started to kind of formulate then. Yeah. And I started to see that in my life, I had spent a lot of time looking to arrive. When I get this job, when I get this education, when I marry, when I do that.
Yeah.
And a lot of us do that, right?
Mm.
But we forget that it's not about the destination. It's more about the journey that we're on.
100%.
And that's really one of the lessons. And again, the movie, you see that very clearly, that, you know, they're very concerned about getting to Santiago at one point, but they start to realize that it's more about what they're going through and creating the connections, the introspection as well throughout the movie. So,
for sure. And the main character, Martin Sheen, plays Tom, I think his name was.
Yeah.
You know, he was a successful doctor. Spent his spare time on the golf course with his other doctor buddies and lived this kind of, you know, insular life. And then he forced himself to take this walk, gets out of his comfort zone. And even it's probably not even till he's about halfway down the trail that he finally just says what he's really thinking. That scene when he's had a bit too much to drink and he has a go at everybody. And and after that, he's like, oh, crap, you know, and he apologizes and make amends. Then he realizes, you know, that he needs these people and they need him.
Yeah.
You know, it's about, they'll have their own different reasons for doing the pilgrimage. And they're all changed people at the end of it, you know. And I've found the movie so inspiring, and it made me think about, you know, how I want to continue to honor the legacy of my daughter, who most people listening will know, who passed away last year from brain cancer. Yeah. And you know, I've thought about doing a walk of some kind. I'd really love to do that. I know my mates would be like, all right, Forrest Gump, you're not going to run across it. Well, I'm not going to run. No, absolutely, I'm not a runner.
No, you can't run it.
No, Forrest Gump just ran because he felt like running. He didn't have a reason, right?
Right.
But
that's right. That's right.
You know, walking, I love walking, you know, and hearing your story and the fact you've done it and that you're planning to do it again is that's really inspiring, you know, and I would love to.
Well,
more about your journey as well.
It's a challenge, Brian, and I will tell you that even when you prep for the walk, because the second time that I went, I had learned a lot of lessons the first time, right? One of the things that they tell you is do not carry a pack that is heavier than 10% of your body weight, and my pack was not heavy at all by all means, but definitely we carry a lot of unnecessary stuff with us.
Oh, yeah.
I think we had been walking, we had gotten to the city of Pamplona with my friend. And this is the first time after walking in the mountains and through some small villages that you get to the city. And you're taken back by all the hustle and bustle. But more importantly, one of the first things we did is we went to the post office to get rid of stuff and mail stuff home because, you know, we think we need a lot, but we really don't.
No.
We really need very, very little. Mm-hmm. And it's very important to remember that, because the possessions, like in the Martin Sheen character, really you're caught up in your country club, you're caught up with your life. There's a certain level of comfort, but is that just the white noise of life, right?
Yeah.
Are you really connecting? Are you really connecting to yourself? Also, right? Mm-hmm. Or are these things kind of filling a void that it's not really filling? It is just kind of numbing you from life. So that's one of the things that I see in the movie, that you're forced to see, like, what am I carrying? He carries the ashes of his deceased son.
Yeah.
And he loses his pack at one point. So it's like, you know, you realize what matters most in life. When you have so little, and you know that it is the people that matter the most, it's the relationships, and it's the memories as well, because you create these memories that then take you through life.
Absolutely. You know, and I don't think anything else puts that into perspective more than the grief you feel when you lose a loved one, especially the loss of a child. You know, it's it really puts things into perspective, how short and fragile life is. And then literally overnight, your whole belief system and value system is changed, and you're never the same person. You know, I think, you know, my experience has given me the opportunity to be stronger and do things that I normally wouldn't have done before. And I have, you know, and a big part of that for me this year has been launching this podcast, you know, something that I was thinking about for years and putting off and procrastinating about, but I'm like, you know what? No, I'm just going to do it. You know, it's got me thinking of all these other things I want to do, and it's just the beginning, you know. So I related a lot to the character of Tom, and I would love to do that walk one day. I'm really, really inspired. The longest I've ever walked in one go is 26 kilometers, and that was it was pretty silly. It was walking home from the city one night after a bar had shut, and I lost my friends, and I had no money for a taxi, and my mobile phone.
There you go.
Had died, and I walked straight down the main highway, 26 kilometers home
in cut
leather shoes. I made it 5 hours and 45 minutes later. My legs.
That's great timing for 26. So
I did all right. I was a young guy at the time. I don't think
there you go.
Now in low cut leather shoes, but even on that walk, like I felt very, you know, like it was a spiritual experience. I also had
it's
a bit
empowering. To drink
as well, but that probably didn't help.
Well, speaking of drinking, that's one of the things that they show you in the movie too. That's and by the way, that's really true of the movie. The movie shows you that at the end of the day, you know, they go to the outdoor cafes and they're having some wine. You really, that's exactly how it is. If you don't like to drink, you're going to be around people that drink a lot, because in some cases, they have most of the restaurants in the small villages, or the pensiones, or the albergues where everybody stays. And these are just for pilgrims. These they're hostels, but they're only for pilgrims. You have to have your credentials as a pilgrim to stay there.
Wow.
But some of them offer the pilgrim menu, and the pilgrim menu consists of your starter, your main course, dessert, and a bottle of wine, or all you can drink wine in some cases, you know. That's you're just cute. Talking to people, having a great in-depth conversation. You're talking about where you've been, who you are, what you're
love
dealing with, and you're having a glass of wine. And in some cases, someone, you know, pulls out a guitar and you end up singing, and
fantastic.
It's a great camaraderie for sure.
What an amazing experience. And the film, I think from how you've described it and how the film portrays it, it sounds like it's quite true to how it really is. And I love that. I love connecting with people from around the world. At the end of the day, we're kind of all really the same, you know. We're all on a walk. We're all walking away from something. We're all walking towards something. So this is a great metaphor for that, you know. And
absolutely. And that's what happens in the movie, by the way, Brian, because all these characters that are with Tom, are so different, such different walks of life, and they are walking away from something or going towards something that they want, that they think they're going to get from this walk. But ultimately their defenses are broken down, and and they can create a dialogue among each other. And although if we met under other circumstances, you would think that we're very different, and yet we're not. We're very alike. And the people that I met through the walk, you know, I have to say, I probably remember 90% of the people that I've met, that I spent time with, and I remember them by name and remember their stories, and they have touched my life in so many incredible ways. And then the people, I have to, this is something that a lot of people don't talk about. The people that live in the villages, in the pensions and the restaurants that cater to the pilgrims, they are incredible people, because think about it. This is their everyday life. They have people coming in and out from all walks of life. But yet you would think that I am the first pilgrim arriving at their place, and I am the first person that they're going to go out of their way to make comfortable. There's people that as you walk, sometimes leave water if they know that there is no water in between stops. And typically you can get to a store, but they leave water or snacks for pilgrims. There's some instances in which a lot of the churches also host you for free. And obviously they ask for a donation, and I love staying in these places. And but those were the most incredible experiences too, because here are these people who spend their life giving to others, and they're giving to you, and you're just like, wow, this is amazing. Like they're pampering me. It's incredible.
Wow. Yeah. What a journey. And the film obviously inspired you to do it. The film's inspired me to do it. And I think anyone who's not seen this, you owe it to yourself to watch The Way.
Absolutely.
And you will, you know, we can all relate to.
We can relate to that.
Needing to take a walk and release some stuff. And
100%. And if it's not that walk, it's a great metaphor for life. And I encourage people to pay attention to some of those details. There is something that is said among pilgrims. I will venture to say, they say that the Camino, right, the pilgrimage calls you, because a lot of people will watch the film and they think, oh, this is nice. A lot of people will watch the film and they feel the calling. So I think you're being called to the Camino.
Yeah, absolutely. If it resonates with you, it's like, it's something you need to do. So
for sure.
Yeah, well, very inspiring, Julian. Again, thank you for introducing me to these films, and all three films that I hadn't seen, so all newbies for me.
Great.
So thank you.
I love it.
Yeah, so really great, really great. And this has been a fascinating conversation, you know, and just really just a hint of the life experience that you've got, and the perspective you have on things is amazing, which I'm sure is what makes you such a great coach, and that helps so many people. And you know, you've found these films that you really connect with, and hopefully our listeners will check them out and connect with them as well. Our time has come to a close, but you know, thank you very much for being on My Movie Story. It's been it's been a privilege hearing your journey.
Thank you.
Hearing your story.
Thank you so much.
And thank you very much. It's been great to have
you, Ryan. Thank you so much for having me. I love talking about films and talking about life and life experiences. And you know, art imitates life, or vice versa, right? So go out, go to the movies, and you know, pay attention to the different lessons that we can gain from these movies that really impact our lives. So thank you again, and great job in the work that you're doing.
Thank you. All right. Thanks a lot, Julie. Take care.
Take care.
Thanks for tuning into My Movie Story. We hope you enjoyed today's episode with our special guest and the movies that we talked about. Don't forget to hit that like button, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and follow us on Spotify or your favourite podcast platform. Your support means a lot to us. You can also stay connected with us on social media for all the latest updates and special content, and you'll find our page on Facebook. Until next time, take care and enjoy the movies. See you on the next episode.